Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5. DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. For the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, igerstudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.com. Today on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to be here with Robert Calderon. Robert is a fabulous fashion, beauty, lifestyle photographer out of New York City, and he shoots 100% film. That's it. Him and his trusty RZ system making beautiful over-the-top photography. This is really cool stuff. And Robert's going to join us today to talk about film, about photography, about the state of what's going on with photography, and how it's a challenge for everybody. But it's still a great time to be shooting. It's a great time for gear. There's film. It's cool stuff going. And Robert's got beautiful fashion, glamour photography. You know, this guy's cranking out some beautiful stuff. So this is going to be very, very cool. Robert, how you doing today, buddy?
Pretty good, Scott. How about yourself?
Good. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you on the program today to talk about yourself and your beautiful photography. This is great stuff.
Kind of you to say. Appreciate that.
So, Robert, let's talk about yourself. You're a commercial photographer out of New York City doing what, mainly fashion, portrait. What are you doing? What are you up to, buddy?
Portrait, fashion, and still aspiring, after 20 years, hitting the goals of advertising and just trying to chip away at the upper end of the market as the years go by.
So let's talk about yourself and how you got involved in photography.
Started off, I guess, as a youngin, a lot of cameras around the house. Grew up in the Brady Bunch era, so as a kid in the 70s, everybody was taking photos. Color film was out. There were a lot of instamatics. My family had some SLRs. There were no shortage of Kodak moments growing up, so just as kids learned, you could say something with a photo just as funny as you could, whether you were saying a joke or you were making a strong statement. I ended up taking a lot of photos of anything around me, cars, babysitters, you name it, and it's just something that just came naturally young. And as time went on, I didn't realize I'd make a living at it, but kept it as a pretty serious hobby until I hit my late 20s. And kind of mid to late 20s, I realized people were starting to pay for stuff that they couldn't do themselves, or they wanted to get something and they couldn't figure out how to do it. If you know how to do it, you could fill in that gap and make a little money doing it.
So did you have any formal education in photography, or was it just when you started off as a kid and just started taking pictures?
I did try to formalize with summer classes, doing what I could as far as the arrhythmia, but nothing that I would run around with a degree or get crazy with, only because I did spend a lot of time musically, definitely right out of high school, try to get involved in the arts as much as I could. Music was a big part of it. I played in a lot of punk bands. I took any job I could to buy instruments, camera equipment, kind of mixed that in with a lot of goofing off. So that late teenage years till I'd say mid-20s, did a lot of goofing off, surfing, music, photography.
Why not? If you can get away with it, more power to you.
Yeah, nobody said anything until I ended up meeting a girl and getting married. Then I had to roll up the sleeves, take on some serious work, make some decisions. The photography did end up being one of the stronger ones I'd made along the way. Did a lot of other stuff in between, but it got more and more apparent that I figured out a way to set up my first studio. If you build it, they will come. I tried to figure out what wasn't around, and I was in New England, so there wasn't a lot of people doing stuff that was non-wedding related. So I thought, let me open up a studio in Providence, in back of RISD of all places, next to Brown. I'll be the guy that won't do weddings. I'll be the guy that won't do events. I tried to figure out all these things I wouldn't do, and then I'd leave the doors open to anything else. And then, believe it or not, everything else started to come in. So I took the show after 8 years to Manhattan and kept that going right up to recently.
So you started out with your first studio in Rhode Island next to Brown.
Yeah, which was interesting. It's a street called Thayer Street, really wild street. And anyone that's been in that area, kind of like in New York, there's St. Mark's Place. Every major city has that one kind of art street where you're going to go down the street, see somebody with a mohawk or see somebody panhandling, singing a song. There's always something eclectic, a lot of thrift stores, stuff that really has a bohemian vibe to it. So that's kind of where I opened up my first studio, only because I used to hang out there when I was a kid. I said, oh, at least I'll run into some people that want photos of their getup. Because growing up in the punk rock movement, a lot of people would make their own clothing. A lot of people would really go to great lengths to make a statement, be different. A lot of times they didn't really have great photos of it. When I finally entered in, that was kind of like reliving my childhood. I'd find people just strolling in that just wanted great photos of whatever they made clothing-wise. Even today, I mean, you still see this pretty healthy rock movement or punk movement, even though it's not like late 70s or mid-80s. There's still enough of it that was keeping my interest anyway. I'd take a kid off the street, and he was panhandling, and we ended up having a photo shoot. The makeup artists, everybody I work with, they're all very creative and kind of like loose cannons. They did this kid-up style. We had these photos. We sent them to New York before I got there, and he didn't know what to do. I said, man, and I had no contact there at the time. But we sent the kid over, and 2 weeks later, he's shooting with Steven Meisel for Dolce & Gabbana. So it was just, we were like, wow. Kid come back, like 6 months later, with a brand new factory, driving around. He's like, man, this is nuts. You know, he destroyed it. But yeah, they're like, oh, look at this. I got this from modeling. They'd send us postcards. So I knew there was something in it at that point where I could take my love for the craft and kind of marry it with some restless souls, people that wanted to make a little noise, because you put that next to film, I mean, you're going to get something that's going to entertain somebody.
Exactly so. And I think that, especially when you're starting out, and even throughout your career, you need to be able to create vibrant, exciting images. And when you can find exciting, vibrant people, it really helps.
Yeah, because I'm terrible. I mean, you wouldn't want me to shoot an event or document something because I'm probably not paying attention to anything other than the event or what I'm looking at as far as the photography, and that would be second. But when it comes time to instigate or somebody says, geez, I need a shot to do this, I'd have like restaurant campaigns or I had small diners I would do ads for. Then this big restaurant mogul came up to me and said, geez, I want my place to look cool and hip. You go in there and you know, I say, where do you make all your money? It's like at the bar, but it's dead after 10 o'clock. So we'd round up some of the girls from Thayer Street, style them up, bring them down there, and make bartenders out of them for a big ad. That guy was just booming. He opened up like 2 restaurants after. So like you're instigating something, you get something that is goal related, and then you figure out how can a photograph find its way into an ad where people would react to it and then want to go down to that place. That's where some head scratching and thinking go on. It does make you feel like you're part of something that probably wouldn't have happened had you not cared less about it. So there's a point where you just don't care too much. The client wants something, but you got to throw in some surprises there, and usually those are the ones that'll work. They want to use their own staff. So I said, no, no, use these girls. 2 of them were my roommates. So it's just funny. Some of those ads, I look back today, I can't put them on my site because they're not real models or they're not at a point where like my commercial clients or anyone looking at my site where I want to kind of take my work, they wouldn't think that's funny. But the beginnings, I can still look at a lot of that stuff in my older books and laugh because the hijinks you can pull off with small budgets.
So let's talk about the fact that you are hardcore film guy. I mean, you've never bought a digital camera.
No, I've held a few. I've rented a bunch. And it's like a lot of people that you'll talk to that are film users. They're not getting that three-dimensionality out of digital. They're not getting the texture, the skin tones. They tend to look a bit animated, plastic. They've come a long way, and I'm sure it'll keep getting better and better. But I found, unlike the cassette tape, where when the CD came out, the cassette tape never advanced. So, of course, it died off. But I mean, each year, I think film advances along with digital, and it's still beyond a few footsteps ahead, I think, almost always. I mean, they could even get a plastic camera at the drugstore or CVS for $8 and go out there and get stuff. I'd be a lot happier than if I was shooting on a Mark III. I don't know. That's just me. I just feel like once you scan it, once you capture everything out of what was inside the film, because it is layered, there's liquid dyes, there's so much going on. It's not a flat chip, and it doesn't look flat when it's printed.
Are you a color negative guy or chrome?
I love both. Safety-wise, of course, over the years, I've learned to be a little heavier on print film. But chrome, as I've gone on in time, I've become a lot more confident when I'm running around with an RZ. You've got to feel good when you pop that trigger. And I felt better and better over the years using more and more chrome into a lot of my shoots. I was very happy. Even now, if I have a choice, depending on how important the project is, I'm shooting color, I'll try to reach for chrome. If I know I'm not going to be under the gun and I have to kick out a ton of images and I have to be able to work with almost everyone I shot. Chrome has come a long way. Plus, you can always clip test it, push it, and pull it. I still like the way chrome looks when you hold it up to a window. You hand a roll of chrome, even today, over to a client. Man, they're like, wow, when did they come out with this?
What's the situation like there in New York City with the labs? I mean, is there still a lot of people that are doing chrome development and clip tests? I mean, what's that look like?
Well, when I first arrived in the city, say, late 99, opened up my second studio, I was in Union Square, which was the photo district. We still have a location there. But that district in the, I would say, like, probably 1999, 2000, you started to get a lot of Silicon Valley companies in there. They ended up calling it Silicon Alley. So all the rents went up, and a lot of those labs left. And then the ones that were hanging on, as digital came in, it just kicked them again. And now there's maybe just a handful. When I say a handful, I mean one hand, as opposed to maybe 50 labs when I had gone in. So over the last 11 years, I would say the poor labs have just dropped down. And to watch them die in front of you as you go in dropping film off, or working with them, doing C prints, and knowing the benefits of what they're doing, and seeing these poor buggers getting squeezed on rent, you just feel bad to let you end up being one of them. I ended up being one of those guys because my studio rent, Union Square, in that photo district, just up to this year, the numbers just didn't work out. There wasn't enough work to satisfy the building owner's rates. You see a lot of photographers that have their own studios. Those guys don't exist anymore. And I'm probably one of those guys now where even right now I didn't re-sign my lease. I'm kind of a non-studio guy.
Well, I mean, really, especially in New York, isn't it people don't even have studios anymore? They just go down and rent one when they need it. Otherwise, they just shoot on location?
Yeah, they were trying to push that as a fact, maybe even up to about 5-6 years ago. But that statement was being pushed by people that just didn't have studios. They never really ponied up and took a big chance. It takes a really big chance to try to make that rent every month. It's a lot easier to not take that chance. But now, even if you do take that chance, the math just isn't there. I found there was a way to run a studio. I knew I wasn't the only guy doing it, but there are a lot of people that just wanted the ease of going in, places all set up. But you lose your ability to be creative, too. You can't build a set 2 nights before. You can't try some stuff out when you do that. Because I think there are some great advantages to having your own studio, because renting studios, even now, I'm walking into somebody else's living room, and you put your feet up on the couch. You don't have that feeling, even if it's your camera and tripod, or even if you bring your own lighting, and by the time you do all that, it takes a little out of here. Where if you have all your toys, and you know every angle of the wall and ceiling, and you know what time of day you can rely on certain lighting, nothing beats having your own studio. Now we're at that point where it is something that's very, very hard to do, if not impossible. Even myself, after 20 years, I finally said, oh man, I can't support these building owners. No matter what city you're in, I think it's kind of the same all around.
Do you think that you'd have better luck in Southern California and Hollywood than what you've been doing in New York City?
Well, everything's changed, Scott. The magazine market, of course, is going a lot more online. That's changed. The budgets are down. So New York is certainly magazine capital as opposed to Southern California. You have a lot of movie industry, a lot of celebrities, they all live out here. But you try setting up a relationship with a publicist, I mean, getting to these people, very difficult for the type of style and the type of stuff I like to shoot, where it is more ad-driven or portrait-driven. I feel like I'm still trying to figure out an avenue to approach the L.A. market that way, celebrity-wise, or going towards maybe posters or something. A little different from what I was doing in New York, which was more editorial, more of like whatever came in the door, too. A lot of music came in, a lot of album shoots, which now are CD cover shoots, which now go down to like a MySpace 1-inch by 1-inch. So a lot of the small labels I was working with, too, have moved out of the city to New Jersey. So you're around a lot of people kind of moving out. So I've kind of acclimated myself here. I've been out here for a few months and met a lot of people that I've worked with, makeup artists, a lot of creatives that are out here. They're kind of working for studios and they're doing stuff, but not a lot of heavy fashion this kind of the country, too. So they're just trying to make it to the next week. You hear that in many industries, of course, but it is what it is. So I'm rethinking a lot in my business plan right now, how to still make money at something that I've been used to doing and continue to want to do. So now the challenges, there's challenges with the type of equipment we're expected to use and challenges with the environment we're expected to shoot it in. And then the price of what we're expected to create all that and sign off on it, too. So a lot of factors not working in a positive direction to kind of push yourself up the ladder in the industry. There's some thinking that I might even do a studio situation where if I open up another studio, it would be my third studio. And I'd have to say, do I want to do it in L.A. or do I want to do it back in New York and just rethink of a way how to make a New York studio work without having 15 photographers on top of each other, with none of them having any sets to be creative. So that's kind of where I'm thinking right now. It'd have to be maybe a nightclub and photography studio. You've got to sell beer and photo shoots. I mean, I'm trying to seriously think of mixed combination.
I think if you had a recreational environment that was a studio, but then you could still have a little social gathering as well, so you could have all the photographers and models hang out.
Yeah, well, that's what my last two studios have been over the last 18 years, 20 years, where the only reason I've actually survived up to this point is open door policy. And models would come in and meet musicians, musicians would meet actors, actors would meet designers, a lot of emerging artists. I'd say 90% of all emerging artists. It'd be great because they could come in and tell everybody how tough their road to their goals are and one would share it. There'd be shoots that would go on at 2, 3 in the morning right on Broadway and 18th, and we kept that 24-hour deli downstairs very busy. They just constantly send up cases of beer and food. That's one nice thing about being in a big city. Everybody really wants somewhere to go, especially if it's after 3 in the morning. So it'd be nothing to have maybe almost 50, 60 people inside the studio just hanging out and exchanging cards and stories and stuff. Oh, geez, if I could actually figure out a way to do a cover charge on that, that'd be awesome. Everybody likes photo studios. Everybody likes recording studios, if you had a chance to go into like a recording studio somewhere. So there's got to be a way somewhere down the road to satisfy the building owners as far as the rates, and then still be able to kick out stuff that you're happy you did. There's a lot of things changing, the whole hanging on to film, encouraging Kodak and Fuji to keep creating new product. They won't put any ads out because they've got their hands dirty with digital cameras themselves. They make a lot of components or even bodies. I guess it would look hypocritical if they keep putting ads out there. I haven't seen an ad for a film outside of a trade publication in years.
No, they don't advertise. You're right. They don't. So how are people going to know, or that maybe would want to know, they just don't advertise their own stuff? Even if you go to certain people's websites that make film, not naming anybody, you can't even find it. You got to go into a deep Google link somehow to find the page where the film is.
Yeah, the profit margin. See, the profit margin probably hasn't changed in film. And what's changed is they were able to make a lot more money with inkjet paper, with machines, with point and shoots. And, you know, the best thing that ever happened to camera manufacturers and retail stores was the entry of digital cameras. Because at that point, they realized they had a whole different audience. People that would probably never enter photography. Maybe it's the work involved in learning the craft, or maybe the cost, or whatever. But they realized they could make it easy, and they could make it quick for somebody to look at something they created or be part of something. It's just like flat-screen TVs. Once they get them in, they're going to see them in 6 months, 12 months. I've had situations where just scanning my work, still being a film shooter, you just can't keep sending stuff out for scans. I finally looked around, and the scanner that worked for me was the Nikon 9000, the ED. Great scanner. I mean, they still make it. You'll never hear about it. You can't find it. You can't go into any camera store, I don't care how big, and find one of these things sitting there for sale. The store doesn't want to sell it because you're going to end up using film, and it's just going to encourage you to keep using it. And Nikon, I mean, I had to call Nikon myself to get one of these machines. And I only did it because I made so much noise at one of the trade shows. I'm like, God, man, why can't you guys give the stores the scanners? They're like, well, they haven't ordered them. You go to the stores, and like, oh, we've ordered them. They haven't given it to us. It's just an excuse. They're passing the buck. And finally, Nikon supplied me with a scanner, but I had to get it directly from Nikon. Great scanner, I mean, but I just feel bad even talking about it because if anyone listening wants to get it, they're going to have to go through quite a lot of work, a lot of phone calls, but they actually do find one. It's 4,000 DPI off a negative. Usually that's done in 60 seconds, so they won't be disappointed if they run any chrome or print through these scanners. They're just great.
You would have thought in New York City that you could have went to B&H or Adorama and just walked out the door with one.
No, they won't stock it, and I'm on a first-name basis with the guys at Adorama and B&H and Calumet and everywhere else. you got to realize, too, these poor salespeople that you speak to, they have all these spiffs and bonuses on digital cameras from Canon, from Nikon, from the stores. I mean, the last thing, they'll get fired if they talk about film. They won't even go up to their manager and ask about a scanner. Because their thing is, anyone walking in, entering the craft that heard about film, as soon as they hit one of these guys are going to be like, what, film? Are you kidding me? What year are you from? They want to position film as something in the past, and they don't want to know that it's being used every day on the upper end of the industry. I mean, from what I hear, there's still some wedding guys out there shooting film that are cleaning house because they're getting some better-looking images that probably 90% of their counterparts are not able to get because they're shooting on whatever digital cameras they're using. So I think the editing on film is easier. I think the film is instantly color-corrected when it's manufactured. It's just so much you can get out of it for so little cost and time. I mean, just be comfortable with your shutter speed and your f-stop and be able to look at the lighting in front of you and go for it. I just think the more people that are able to fight the stores or find a way to get their hands on film and film equipment, I don't think anyone would be disappointed. Hopefully the trend will start to reverse itself. It seems to be. I mean, a lot of assistants I've worked with and had, or guys I've talked to, they see me pull out the RZ on a digital shoot. They're like, what are you doing? Hey, the client wants digital, but man, keep this thing packed. You still know how to pack 120, don't you? And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's like you're getting away with something. They love it. You're a hero to these guys just by being punk rock to the client. I have had more clients say, man, I love these images, and the ones they pick out of the film ones. See, you tried to talk me into shooting digital. I mean, I played more tricks on clients only because I knew that they would look at my work and they would want me to create that, only they wanted me to create it digitally. So it's like, yeah, you're not going to get that look digital. But the problem is, it's so used to people wheeling in screens and TVs, they have a show now when they see photo shoots. That's the whole other aspect of shooting. They don't trust the photographer anymore. Like, an art director wants to see the shot right there. They don't want to know that you just turned your head, yeah, I already got it. And that $1 Polaroid, you know, you give them, they can walk around with, or a staple. Now, the new art directors aren't used to Polaroids. They're just used to flat screens. They're watching the shoot, and it's the most boringest way to have a shoot, is digitally, for me, anyway. Because once you do three shots, everyone stops the show, and they're looking at them. Well, can you crop this? Who cares? We just shot it. The shoot's still going. Well, bugger in front of the camera wants to kill himself. How much schooling can you do? How much fighting can you do? After a while, I kind of stepped off to the side the last few months, and kind of repositioning. And I think a lot of it has been because I am a film shooter. I like the benefits of it, and I'm just taking a little step aside and letting everything hopefully work itself out a bit.
Well, I really think if you do make this move to Southern California, that people still appreciate film. People in Hollywood and LA still understand film. I mean, look at motion picture and television. 90% of the stuff is still shot on film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a big difference between the local news and, like you said, the big shows. A lot of television shows were on film, and I guess a lot of the earlier stuff that was shot on video, a lot of sitcoms and stuff, the stuff never held up, the video stuff. But if you look at Gilligan's Island or I, Dream or Jeannie, that was shot on film years back, that stuff, I guess they scanned it in, it just, it explodes in front of not a bad TV. So, yeah, Hollywood, I guess, knows the value of film and would probably never let go of it, thank God, to the directors. That's probably the only thing that's keeping Kodak and Fuji and a lot of the film companies still pushing film for photographers, because, I mean, they already have the stock. As long as pros keep asking for it. The only problem is a lot of the pros that are using it, kind of like my idols, they're all these upper end list photographers, like Michael Thompson maybe, or somebody shooting W covers or Rolling Stone covers. They're not going to talk about it. They're not going to talk about film. Even according to Fuji people, they've gotten a lot of free equipment, a lot of stuff that goes out to a lot of big shooters, whether they're shooting film or digital, but they really don't do endorsements, which it's not like motorsports where a guy's driving a stock car and got Goodyear tires on the back of his jacket because he really loves Goodyear. He's into it. The guy's making a ton of money, but he also has a sponsor. And you don't see photographers with jackets that say Fujifilm or Kodak. I mean, it'd be great if they did. But the film company, why would a film company want to sponsor a photographer shooting film? I mean, that would just kill them because their hands are so deep into digital now because they're all making printers and inkjets and paper. They've just realized the profit margin on anything digital is astronomical. So there's nothing in it for them. So maybe the film shooters become a smaller circle in photography. It's unfortunate, but I guess the circle won't disappear, but it'd be great if we could make that circle a little bigger, a little tighter, and have that circle make a little more noise. Maybe if photographers wear a film jacket or even fake sponsorship when they're shooting, that'd be funny. I mean, I'd be the first one to do it. I don't care.
Well, I must look terrible then when I wear my Fujifilm hat. I don't know what the deal is with it. And like you said, if they were not making motion picture film, then they would just put a bullet in the whole deal, probably.
Oh, they would. They'd pull the plug on us. I'm sure many people have left the craft rather than make an image that isn't as good as the one they made 10 years ago. See, that's kind of my thing, too. I'm at a point where I get used to stuff. I've been doing it long enough where I really do get used to the skin tones and I get used to the real depth of field, the way it falls off with grain. And the grain is so tight today, you can't tell. I mean, I fooled clients that were adamant about digital. If you tell them you're shooting a film shoot, they don't even want to put you in the mix of bids. So the only way I fixed them, I test them. I said, listen, I just want to let you know, I'll do this job and I'll shoot it with a new digital film. They're like, what's that? I'm like, well, it's the best of both worlds. You get the benefit and quality of film with the ease and quickness of digital. And they're like, wow, when did they stop making that? I'm like, it's great. If you snag a brochure from like Fuji or Kodak, they do brag in some of their brochures at our trade shows that all the new films are very scannable for digital. And they do, I guess, reluctantly have to tout the benefits of film. I mean, they hide those brochures. They probably make a bunch anyway and then throw them out before somebody grabs them. But if you do grab one, you show it to a client. I mean, you can back it up that the new film is digital ready. It's designed for scannability, and it really is. But it's the way you have to present it to them. We're using the new digital film today. They're like, wow, that's great. They're like, where's the screen plug-in? I'm like, well, what we're doing is we're using Fuji Instant. They're like, what's that? Well, you heard of Polaroid? This is the new Polaroid. I'm like, wow. Yes, Fuji bought all Polaroid rights. Check this out. And I said, this is 300 DPI. Look at this. They're like, wow. Why is this better than a screen? I said, you ever take a screen and try to scan it? I said, you can take this right here. Scan this thing right now. Take a photo of it. Hang it up on your wall in your refrigerator. I said, this is a tangible thing. I said, that just gives you a little idea of what we just packed in that roll of 120 or 220. They're like, wow. And I said, is everything you shot going to look this good? I'm like, yeah. So it's going to look even better. We're going to have more surprises in there for you. They're like, well, how long does it take? So your digital shoots, when do you get your stuff? They're like, well, we usually get it in a day or two. The guy has to edit it and color correct it and then batch it. I'm like, I'll have this ready for you in about 2 hours. I'll send it over to Dougal and rush the chrome. And they're like, what do you mean we have it in 2 hours? I said, well, it's all color corrected. You can do your own editing right now on the light table. But go by the window, have a coffee, just tell me which ones you want. I'll just scan it in another hour. They're frozen in their tracks because they just think that, A, you're lying to them, or everyone they've ever done business with in photography has been lying to them. But they know somebody's kidding them. Somebody's pulling their leg. But when you give them their roll of 120 in their hand, they walk to the window, make a little piece of tape up on that window. They're looking at it with a loop, and they're like, oh, my, it's alive. They just go wild over it. But they can't believe that people would not want to use that and shoot digital. Because they just think the reason everyone's shooting digital is it's better. But it's not. It's only cheaper, or it looks cheaper. They think it's quicker, but it's not really quicker. The post programs, all the Adobe programs, they don't want any film shooters. I mean, you buy one program, you nail it. You're on the hook. You've got to keep updating them. I look at contact sheets from 15 years ago. They still look as good as they get out of a top-end digital pack. But what do you do? I mean, do we have to have like an infomercial? Do we go on television? Do we have an expose with Geraldo? Does somebody put a focus on this conspiracy of profit that the art's being lost? Somebody somewhere along the line will probably do a documentary on film photography and then try to sell that to a studio or an indie film company. And maybe somewhere along the line, people will feel they get duped. Oh my God, we lost film, or we almost lost film, or something to that effect. Because still, photography is just so exciting. If somebody thinks they're into it now and they haven't shot film, I mean, if they shoot film, they won't want to do anything else. If they have a camera in their hand, they'll...
Right. Well, let's talk about your shooting RZ, Mamiya RZ, and you've been shooting this for quite a while. So let's talk about this whole system. And I think that originally, when we were all 100% analog, these were very expensive systems, and now they're extremely economical.
Unbelievable. I have backs that are over 10 years old. They work great. I never even changed the rollers. But people, once again, it's what they're used to. But those things are built solid. I'm an RZ guy. I started off, of course, with 35, and I wanted to go up to 6.45. And then after that, I'm like, yeah, I've got to go RZ. It fits right into the magazine pages. If I do a shoot, magazine wants to look at it in almost finished form, they pretty much can. Very little cropping is needed. And the negative is just so big, you can eyeball this thing, whether you're looking at a chrome or even a contact. You don't even need a loop. And that's where the RZ had really won me over. But working on it, relying on it, any of the lenses from the 110 to the upper end lenses, even the fisheyes, there's never a bad lens. There's just never bad optics. There's never a bad delivery. You almost have to try to mess up. But, I mean, focusing, of course, they're not autofocus cameras. So you have to just learn a rhythm focusing. They've got focus wheels on both sides of the camera. They've got like a fine focus. I don't know anyone's ever used that. But they're just great. You can handhold them. I do it even sometimes without the grips. But it's a feel. It's like running around with a truck if you're used to smaller cameras. But the benefit is the finished product. I notice a difference. I have two F100s still that I load up and use for shoots where there's a lot of movement and stuff. I scan those 35 chromes, and now I'm having a hard time telling the difference whether I shot it in medium or not. Film has just gotten so advanced that even medium now, it's almost overkill how awesome it is. But the RZ, just the whole system of the RZ, I think is perfect.
Do you find that with the RZ, there's a negativity with slow glass? Everybody now is looking for this fast glass, with Mamiya glass being 3.8, 3.5, 4, 5, 6, whatever. Do you find that it's too slow and the depth of field is not shallow enough?
For the type of work I do, for studio work, definitely not. I mean, you can tripod this, you can take it off the tripod. If you've got some serious lighting, I mean, I still have Speedotron units, and I can pump in 2400. I can run around with that thing in my hand right in the middle sweet spot of the lens, never mind banging it down a 4. But I think for different shooters, that could be a problem. I mean, I don't know of any wedding guy that could run around with one of those, or somebody doing questionable lighting changes or dim lighting, or able to handle it if you had to do that. But I think for the type of work, say advertising, portrait, even the fashion work that I do, I really try to use as much medium as I can. I mean, I have gone back to 35 over the last few years because there's a lot of movement required in some fashion editorial. And there's only so much I can do with those lenses sometimes because the depth of field does fall off quickly. Your focus point, I mean, you don't want the boots to be in focus and soft hair. So there's some points where those lenses can be a little tricky. But I think once you're into it, you're into it. You feel comfortable with it. You can do almost anything.
And you've used the 110-28?
Oh, that 110-28, that's my secret weapon. I won't even talk about that because I didn't want to bring that up when you were talking about the f-stops, because that's where the case is closed. I mean, you can leave that right at 2.8, have a party. I mean, I've run out of light, do shoots on location, and the lighting just drops right when the stylist has everything ready, and you're like, oh. So that 2.8 has saved me. And if anything, you know, you can always take the tripod and drop it down and drag the shutter and tell people to move a little slower. But the 2.8, if you have any kind of light at all, yeah, I still use a lot of 100-speed film and maybe 160. That's pretty much where I'm at. But yeah, if you load in 400 or 800, you have that 110 on, I mean, just because it's a lighter lens, too, you can run around with it. But it's also pretty much bulletproof. It does a lot. It really does. I've done whole shoots with just one lens on. Sometimes that's the one lens. I bring like 10 lenses or whatever. I end up liking composition on the 110 on the RZ, and we end up sticking with it. You get busy, you forget to do the other lenses anyway. But a great, great lens.
If you were going to pick any piece of glass on the RZ system, what would it be? They said, Robert, you got your body and one lens. What are you going to take?
For the type of work I'm doing, because it could go anywhere from half waist up portraits to full length, I'd have to go 110. 180 is like my favorite portrait lens, but I'm a little limited. If somebody wants a full length, I have to have 25 feet. So I have to answer that question honestly. I have some favorite, the 150 and 180, but if I had to work with one lens for a month, I know I could still have people not mad at me if I had the 110.
Yeah, your photography is beautiful. Where can people find out, Robert, about what you're doing, your portfolio? They can look at your videos because you've also directed and shot some cool video things too. So tell me about the website, where they can get a hold of you and just look at this fabulous work because it's beautiful.
Oh, thanks for saying that, Scott. Well, if they want to see what I've been up to, they can go to robertcalderone.com. And Calderone is always misspelled. So if they do it C-A-L-D-A-R-O-N-E, they will definitely be able to view what you just mentioned.
There's beautiful photography here. I think they should really look at what you're doing because this is fabulous, inspiring work. It's great to see that you can shoot film and you can use an RZ system. This stuff is over the top, man. It's good. Really good stuff.
Well, at least everything up there, your audience can know that it's all film, and anything that's done 2 months ago or 10 years ago, whatever they see, it's definitely all film stuff.
Yeah, so they should definitely look at your work, Robert, and I definitely appreciate you joining us on the program today. This is very cool. Get a chance to talk with you, and I look forward to chatting again here, seeing if you're going to make this move to Hollywood. And like I said, this is just really inspirational, and I really appreciate your insight and all your experience in just chatting today, and this is good stuff, and I think our listeners are going to love it as well.
Oh, that's great. Just tell everybody, let's make that film circle larger this year. Make it as large as they can. Tell as many friends as they can about it.
There you go, Robert. Thanks so much, buddy.
Okay, Scott. Thank you.
Well, there you go. Robert Calderone. Fabulous, beautiful photography. Definitely want to check out his website. He's got great work. It's very inspirational. Just take to heart what Robert said. There's a lot of stuff going on in the industry, but you can still create beautiful images. You can shoot film. It's just fine, fine, beautiful photography. Check out Robert's work. Great stuff. The Inside Analog Photo Radio program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film, and of course, fine quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, RichardPhotoLab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chroma, DR5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at Upstrap-Pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at IgerStudios.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at APUG.org and our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House over at eastmanhouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shippard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.